From the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about the environment and our relationships with it. I'm Chris Cherniak.
And I'm Claire Wiley. And first on the show this morning is Jeremy Lynch and Talitha McGuire, Stewardship Director and Stewardship Coordinator with the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance. They join us to talk about the successes of their 2025 stewardship program to date, what is still to come this year, and how you can even get involved. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us today.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Well, why don't we begin this way? Let's get the 411 on Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance, what it is that the organization does and how it was formed, and then maybe a little bit about each of your roles there. Jeremy, do you want to start?
Sure, of course. So we have a long history. We're now in our fifth decade as an organization. And the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance, it's got a grassroots origin, and it maintains that grassroots quality to this day. Emergent in the years following the Wilderness Act in the 1970s, when there was a need to inventory lands across the West, and in particular, in our case, the state of Utah, to determine the wilderness character, quality, and the need for preservation of wild places. A citizen movement emerged to determine what those lands were, alongside the federal work that was being done at the time to determine what was in need of, what deserved protection. There was an uprising of folks who thought that they could do their part in determining what those protected places would be. And so our origins come from that period of time. There's a wonderful, great history there. And I would advise people to head on over to SUA.org to read more about us and our history. But to suffice it to say for now that we grew out of that period of time. And from that era, we developed legislation, a bill that we've been putting forth ever since called America's Red Rock Wilderness Act, which is an effort to protect the outstanding wilderness at the heart of the Colorado Plateau. And we're specifically a Utah-based organization. Wild places have no state boundaries. And of course, these lands extend well beyond ours. But we focus on those lands within the borders of modern-day Utah. And we have a diverse organization led in great part by our magnificent legal team who works on any number of issues, any number of things that affect our wild places, from mineral and gas leasing to the rising recreation industry, to various movements to remove vegetation or develop in places that maybe aren't the best for development. And we have a lot of great information on that, again, over on our website, and a few of my colleagues can speak really well to that. Of course, we deal with a lot of contemporaneous issues, such as the recent, what maybe many of your listeners are familiar with, the land grab on behalf of the state and what was, pushed toward being a federal government involved process, gratefully set back for the time being, but something to be kept aware of. And then in addition to our legal team, we have several other teams, our organizers who keep the pulse on everything on the ground and work with individuals from the public, to bring attention to the most prescient issues. We have our wildlands team, of which our stewardship program is a part. And we're always out there on the ground, as Talitha can speak to this morning from where she's calling in from, out on field work at the moment. And we have, a robust number of other individuals at our organization all working toward this goal of protecting wilderness across Utah as, in the face of many, many things, the development and climate change being the easiest two to point to.
Right.
You began this stewardship program, as I understand it, about a decade ago, and you are, Jeremy, the director, and Talitha, you are the coordinator, and you're in the field right now, which is great. Thank you so much for making time for us while you're out there. But Talitha, do you want to give us a little bit of an understanding of how and why the stewardship program began?
Yeah, so like Jeremy mentioned, the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance as an organization, our goal is to protect wilderness and wilderness quality lands within Utah. And that started as a activism and grassroots method. And it branched out to also being involved with our legal team and, doing some lawsuits and stuff like that to make sure that these places remained protected and to ensure that inappropriate development was not happening in some of the most rare, wild, and scenic places left in the West. And as a result, we were kind of going along with doing that and created the stewardship program as a way to kind of bridge the gap between our work. So the vision of the program is to literally allow the public to engage in protecting their public lands and learn about its management alongside the federal agencies who steward these lands. So we work with the Forest Service and we work with the Bureau of Land Management. And what we're doing is we're trying to bring the public out into their public lands and show them, hey, this is what management looks like, and you can help protect these wild places as well. Let's go out together. Let's clean up, you know, trashed fire rings. Let's help remediate areas that have been damaged by inappropriate motorized use and vegetation. And let's learn alongside of the land managers and all help each other to protect these wild places that we love so much. So currently, our stewardship program has been running for about a decade now, and we do projects all across the state, from the Moab area out to the West Desert, out to the northern part of the state in Vernal, as well as the Monuments, Bear's Ears, and Grand Staircase. And all of this work out here is a collaborative effort between the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance, the federal land management agencies such as the Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management, and members or volunteers who just are curious about their public lands and want to get out and learn more.
And I can't think of a better way for people to have a greater understanding of what is actually happening than to be boots on the ground and hands getting dirty and helping and seeing. And I think that ignites greater care and a greater urgency probably in all of us once we get out there. Can you share with us some of the programs? Even this year, you've had some very successful programs. Can you share some of the exact programs and what people are doing?
Yeah, so one of my favorite projects this year has been so far was actually in Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument. And we had a group of students come out from the West LA College area. And this was, for many of them, their first time out on their public lands and their first time to Utah. So students were able to come out here, learn about what public lands were, see the Milky Way for the first time, and go out into the field and get these hands-on conservation skills, which if they choose to go in this field in the future, they can actually put on their resume. So it was a really powerful and impactful experience to see these students touch a juniper tree for the first time in their lives, or understand that, hey, I too can make a difference in all of these public lands around us, even if I don't live in Utah. These belong to me, and this is like a part of what it means to be American. So that was really awesome to see that connection happen and to see eyes go wide and, you know, tears of joy and people being like, wow, I can't believe this is the most amazing thing in the world. I love my public lands, and how can I get involved in it doing more?
So you mentioned the students. Is involvement in the stewardship programs or projects limited to students, or can all ages potentially apply?
All ages can apply. We accept all folks. We've had folks who, you know, have never been camping before. We've had folks who, you know, are retired and maybe they've spent their lives recreating outside or working in land management and they just want to give back more. So we accept anybody. Everyone is welcome to apply. You can find that information on our website. We have a slew of projects coming up for the fall that we're really excited about. But yeah, another one of my favorite things about these projects is you get a huge diversity of people coming out in the field with us. So you'll have a project where maybe, you know, there is a college student or one of our scholarship applicants has applied. We have a scholarship program that reduces barriers that allow folks to take time off or come out on a project with us. And then you'll have, you know, retired folks or somebody who just moved to Utah for their new job. And everyone throughout the course of a project gets to know each other. And then you leave feeling like, oh, I just made a little family and made new friends. And you have built connections centered around this place and centered around service work, which is really awesome.
So are the projects, obviously they'll range in quite a way from literally, say, mending fences to observing trails or maintenancing trails or so, to looking for, say, cultural artifacts or things along those lines. Give us some details on, particularly on what might be coming up.
Yeah, so we have a few projects coming up this fall that kind of showcase the diversity of the work that we do. So out in September, we're going to have a project in Indian Creek, which is just outside of Canyonlands National Park down near Moab, in which we'll be working with the service to do riparian restoration. Mm-hmm. We'll be installing beaver dam analogs out there, which helps the flow of water.
Right.
It reduces harmful erosion and allows the water to sink into the landscape more, as well as creates habitat for wildlife. So that's really exciting.
Yeah.
In addition, we've got some projects coming up that will be installing buck and rail fences around cultural sites.
Okay.
And that's to protect those cultural sites from folks driving up onto maybe, you know, an artifact midden where they might have not noticed that there's pottery sherds all over the ground, but there are. So we'll be installing fences to protect those. We also have some projects coming up in which we'll be installing educational signage, which allows folks to know what activities are and are not permitted in the region, which allows them to follow rules and regulations. And then in addition, kind of our bread and butter work is that we will be doing some naturalization and remediation work. So we tackle motorized incursions in wilderness study areas. So wilderness study areas, one of the huge awesome things about them is that they're preserved for their qualities of being super wild, natural places. And one of the things that is not permitted in them is off-route motorized travel. So if somebody goes out and does donuts in the sagebrush, we're going to go in there and kind of naturalize that area and make sure that the sagebrush still existing can continue to grow back and bounce back.
And we are speaking with Jeremy Lynch and Talitha McGuire with the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance, talking about their programs and what they are looking forward to this coming summer and fall. How many people generally go on each project, and how many people generally apply?
It varies hugely. We typically will run a project that has anywhere from like 6 to 12 people on it. And in terms of how many folks we get applying for a project, it depends on the region. I can say for our really popular project, which is a Bears Ears archaeology project, we've had more than 40 people apply for that this year, which was really incredible to see folks so excited to get out on their public lands. That being said, it's really important to us to get folks out on the ground with us who haven't been out before. So if you've never been on a project before, we highly encourage folks to apply.
Say when you're working on projects that deal with cultural archaeology, et cetera, are there members of native tribes that are also involved in the project to lend some expertise or history with respect to what you're doing?
For projects that deal with cultural resources, we primarily work with the federal agency's archaeologists.
Yeah.
So they have to run through an internal process to ensure that that work is allowed to happen and that it is going to be done in a way that doesn't damage those cultural resources.
Right.
And I think that's really important to bring up. We can't speak for the tribes personally. Like, I myself am a white person. And it's important to recognize that our public lands and the landscapes that we work on, the tribes have been here since time immemorial.
Right.
And there's a long road ahead to making sure that tribal entities are involved in public land management. And a huge part of that is ensuring that the federal agencies, such as the Bureau of Land Management and the Forest Service, are reaching out to the tribes and involving them in management, which is something that we're seeing happen in Bears Ears, which is really incredible.
Now, Jeremy, how long have you been with SUA?
So I've been with SUA for the duration of the program. I was hired in 2016 to start the program, which we did in a very small scale way, and it's been building up since then. So it's been 10 years. So we're essentially celebrating, or at least acknowledging, that marker in the sand this year.
And as you've moved through the years and you see different issues that we are confronted with our natural lands, what are some of those shifts that I guess that you have seen in the last decade? And what are some of the goals moving forward that you really want to make sure that SUA does?
Sure. The impacts to our wild places have always been there. I would say that, you know, we began, you know, running around and doing the best we could to stay on top of as much as we could at any given time, put out the fires where we were able. And as we've grown in capacity, we've been able to do quite a bit more, and we're essentially always out there now. And that's a key point of this. Constantly building relationships with the land managers who are based in field offices across the state. And there wasn't necessarily a particular, focus above and beyond our broader mission here at SUA, which is to protect wild places. And the orientation of our program was to foster essentially a stewardship ethic and provide these opportunities to work directly to preserve and enhance the wild character of our public lands, all its inhabitants, and the ecosystems in which we work. But by you know, just the natural course of things and the nature of our growing recreation economy here in Utah. Yes. That really became our focus over time. It's what we can tackle really meaningfully at the scale at which we're working. And so I'm referring to things, you know, such as what Talitha mentioned as, you know, off-road vehicle use, but down to, you know, hiking off of trail, mountain biking, e-biking, anything, any form of use into which we're bringing, you know, motorized, mechanized, or, you know, even what people would consider less impactful forms of recreation into the environment. There is, in a lot of cases, just, you know, not a lot of resources out there to help educate people. And so part of the orientation of our program is to be out there, you know, as these stewards, as these people who could provide direction. When it comes to, you know, literal engagement, we're able to do that some of the time, you know, in tandem with the agencies we're working with and while on projects, but also just the nature of the work that we're doing. It's something we say, a bit of a refrain that, you know, if you don't know we were there, then we're doing our job. In other words, if we've restored and naturalized a space to the point that people recognize it as the wild place that it is, then we've done good work, as opposed to people entering, you know, for example, a landscape out in the Circle Cliffs in Grand Staircase Escalante and seeing, you know, tire tracks everywhere through the living soil crust. That's not what we want people's experience of these wonderful places to be. And that's our work behind the scenes in a way.
Yeah. And I'm a true believer in that ripple effect. If you bring people in and teach them and educate them and they, again, see it for themselves and work on it for themselves, I feel like they will share that and they will embrace that or embody that love of the land and hopefully share that with others. So to date, how many people have gone through this program?
Well, that's a good question. We bring out about, you know, it's been 200 to 300 a year for 10 years. So it's several thousand we've brought out over the course of the decade. And a lot of people return. And that's one of the nice things about it. You know, now and again, we get a few folks who come back maybe a couple times a year. Early on in our program, we had quite a bit of that. There's been an evolution over time in which, you know, we have had such a wonderful membership to our organization. It's the premise of our being able to do the work that we can do as our stewardship program and as a Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance as a whole. And we started mostly taking out our members, and we've watched that grow and expand. As Talitha mentioned, we have people from all walks of life coming out with us now. And that's been an evolution that's been really special because, you know, now we might, I think I did the math on it last year. We had one project we had, it was like a 55, 60 year age gap between individuals on the project. And so you really get that intergenerational exchange, people who maybe know the landscape in the way they've known it for 30, 40, 50 years, and someone out there for the first time, and they can share their stories and they can learn from one another. And so, yeah, at the heart of this is community building amongst the people who are coming out on the project, between ourselves and the agencies, the land managers who are out there who are grateful for support, and then between people and the landscape itself. So that's really the heart of it.
It is interesting, Jeremy, that I'm sure SUA kind of found its groundings in working to conserve and protect the wilderness, Southern Utah wilderness, with, you know, with respect to the resource extraction industry, obviously, and I'll say the development industry, but it seems like more and more a lot of your work is designed to address the recreation industry of all things, and I'll say this: the looting industry, the cultural looting industry that is never ending, I suppose, an always ongoing challenge. But it is that recreation industry where people are actually going out, right? I'm getting outdoors and I'm enjoying outdoors, but they can do it in a very harmful way. And so that seems like an ongoing challenge.
I think it will be. It will continue to be. You know, there's responsibility at all levels, from right. the state to, you know, the private business owner to the individual. You know, we work a lot with individuals. We'll work a lot with universities and institutions. There are a lot of responsible people out there. I'll just make a point to say that. Mm-hmm. And it's also that there are just a lot more people out there right now. And, you know, you hit a certain amount of critical mass and people are pushed one direction or another. And when it comes down to it, you know, the funding that the Bureau of Management's field offices, as well as, you know, other federal agencies, the amount of funding that they receive you know, isn't enough to cover, you know, the broad scope of, you know, their directive to manage for multiple uses. So, you know, all of these things that we're talking about, including recreation. And so we've been out there for 50 years. You know, our program grew out of, you know, the field work, as I'd mentioned, that we've been doing since, you know, the 80s effectively. And people we still have on staff have been out there, you know, essentially becoming experts in what's been going on the ground, what's changed, where new non-permitted routes have popped up, where people have started traveling and, you know, from the late 90s into the early 2000s and now 20 years later. And so we're informed by that internal expertise within our organization. And it's something that we're constantly seeking to pass along to the agencies to support them. And we've had some great success in building relationships. And it's, if we're looking ahead to the future, that's really where we're headed, is to continue to build those relationships. Because as we all know, we live in a time right now where there's a lot of, you know, coming and going at the agencies. And when people we know have to leave, choose to leave, or forced to leave, we want to maintain those relationships. And so we're always renewing our offer of support.
Well, the 2025 stewardship program is mid-season now, so there are still opportunities for people to get involved. So again, where would they go to do that and get the application going?
Sure. You can go right to suwa.org/volunteer. That's suwa.org/volunteer. And if you wanted to just scope out our project calendar first, you could go to suwa.org/project calendar. And we have a full listing of our programs there. If you have any questions at all, volunteer@suwa.org is our email address. You'll either find myself, Talitha, or Ellie Swanson, who is our other stewardship coordinator, who's actually out on a project right now down south in Bears Ears. We're really entering the season where if you can catch one of us, great. If you can catch two of us, you're particularly lucky. everyone's all over the place. So.
Well, Jeremy Lynch, who is a stewardship director, and Talitha McGuire, who is stewardship coordinator for the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance, working in their stewardship programs. Thank you so much for joining us today on This Green Earth.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
And welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Claire Wiley.
And I'm Chris Cherniak.
We have been talking about stewardship programs. We were just talking with the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance
right.
about their stewardship programs. And there is also a program that a lot of Utahns have gotten involved with as well, with the Nature Conservancy.
Oh, yeah.
We have Kate Ireland, who is the Director of Youth Engagement for the Nature Conservancy. She leads a team that is elevating the voices of young leaders through innovative programs and curricular resources. And one of those programs are externships. And joining us is an extern who is Marie Taylor, who did studies on the California sea otters. Welcome to This Green Earth.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, we are excited to talk to you. We obviously have an affinity for otters here on This Green Earth and everything that they do for our environment. So I'd like to dive into that. But Kate, first, I really want to talk to you about these programs and let you lay the groundwork and give us the landscape of this relationship with the National Geographic Society. Can you walk us through that?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're really excited at the Nature Conservancy to think deeply about how we are investing in young people today and preparing them for tomorrow. And so the externship that we're running together with National Geographic Society is one of those flagship programs. We also offer free K-12 content, which through our Nature Lab content, we have a really great virtual field trip that will take folks to the Great Salt Lake that we released this fall. We have really exciting programs happening on the ground with young people. We actually run over 200 youth programs globally. There's two phenomenal examples locally in Utah, Wings in Water, that's working with almost 30,000 young people, bringing them on preserves, teaching them about wetlands each year, the Nature Internship that is working together with Indigenous students locally to explore different conservation careers through traditional ecological knowledge alongside tools like GIS. And then there's our externship program, which is happening at a global level. And we are, together with National Geographic Society, bringing together cohorts of 100 young people people for 8 weeks at a time to really dig into a particular conservation topic. They're learning from an online platform. They are partnered up with expert mentors from both TNC and National Geographic Society. They're attending weekly speaker series, and then they're doing their own research in their communities, really investigating a conservation issue that feels significant, important to them, identifying solutions, and then can look to apply for seed funding to implement some of those ideas. So we've been thrilled to be offering this since 2021. We have 1,300 alum of the program, and Marie is one of those phenomenal alumni who have just really done tremendous things and are incredibly inspiring.
So, Kate, you said you have 1,300 alumni?
We do, yeah, and we just keep growing the program. We are offering, we are now offering the externship to 400 young people each year. We hope to continue to grow the program, but we have just seen such tremendous demand for it and interest. We really want to answer the call that we're hearing from young people.
How do students apply, or how do you find your externs?
Yeah, so we have an application process 3 times a year. We actually are just finishing up applications for our summer cohort. If you go onto nature.org or to the National Geographic Society page, just search for externship in the search bar. It'll take you right to our page with an application link. It's a really quick application process. We move folks through from there, and then we'll kick off in just a few weeks with our next summer cohort.
Hmm.
So when you started this partnership, did you think it was going to grow this exponentially and that you were going to get this much of a response? Because it seems wonderful that there's that many students out there and young people that want to do this line of work.
I would have never anticipated this level of interest. We absolutely know from our experiences at the Nature Conservancy, from the interest we see, that there is desire and demand for leadership opportunities, for content, things that will help young people be leaders within their communities as it relates to nature. I couldn't have anticipated this demand, and I think my colleagues at National Geographic Society would say the same. We have now, for those 1,300 spots, we have received over 72,000 applications. We just are overwhelmed by the demand, the interest in the program, which is why we are continuing to grow it, and also look at different ways we can be supporting young people in their leadership journeys and as conservation leaders in their communities.
And these topics are wide-ranging as well, and they're all dealing with things to do with nature and our environment, but they are global. And some of these students are tackling some of the biggest issues that we're facing.
That's absolutely right. It is a very global program. You know, while we have a specific topic area, we may focus on freshwater for one cohort, marine conservation for another. We've done a data visualization piece. Each individual extern is really reflective of their community. And within a cohort of 100, we may have 75 different countries represented. We may have 20 different U.S. states represented. And so there are so many different geographies, issues, local passions that are represented when you look across the span of those 8 weeks, and then multiply that by the 4 cohorts we're offering each year.
Speaking of programs, I think there were 2 ongoing in Utah. One was like Wings Over Water or so.
Yeah, Wings in Water. Wings that is water. A now 19-year-long program that is headed up by the TNC chapter within Utah. They're bringing 27,000 young people ages K-12 out to the Great Salt Lake Shorelands Preserve, which is a Nature Conservancy preserve locally. And the young people are engaging in wetlands exploration. There's content that goes alongside that. It's really focused on how to bring science learning to life through this hands-on outdoor discovery. And then we also, within Utah, there is the Nature Internship, which they've just onboarded, I think, their newest cohort. They'll have 8 students from 6 different tribes as a part of this summer's cohort. I believe it actually just kicked off yesterday on the 16th. And that is really focused on how to support young people exploring conservation careers, how they can integrate traditional ecological knowledge, how they can work alongside restoration science using that knowledge, and then giving them an opportunity to present that content to the TNC staff and folks that they're working alongside.
Well, it seems like such a phenomenal program, and we are really pleased today that we get to speak with an extern, Marie Taylor. Hello, Marie.
Hi.
We are so glad to have you with us here. And your topic that you did was about Southern California sea otters. So tell us a little bit about yourself and why sea otters. Why did you delve into this topic?
I'm Marie. I'm a zoology student at Utah Valley University right now. When I started the externship, it was a marine conservation externship, you know, and I am, of course, from landlocked Utah, where we don't have the ocean. So I was trying really hard to think about what topic, and I have just absolutely always loved sea otters. I love otters of all kinds. I also love river otters and just small cut otters and otters, but I've always really, really loved sea otters. And I was like, when am I going to have another chance to get to work with sea otters, you know? And then as I did more digging, it became a lot more meaningful than just loving sea otters, because a lot of people don't know that it's really, really crucial for sea otters to conserve their energy. They have to eat around 25% of their body weight each day to have enough energy to be healthy and stay warm, because they don't have blubber like other marine mammals. So they have to eat and groom and rest a lot to just maintain themselves. So when humans go up to them and try to pet them or just take selfies with them, they can really scare them and cause them to dive and swim off. And this uses a lot of energy that they need just to survive. So it became really important for me to spread that message and let others know that.
And what were some of your discoveries about sea otters that you found to be the most fascinating?
The most fascinating? Oh, sea otters have the densest fur of any animal ever. They have about 1 million furs per square inch, I think, which is really cool. And then also, this one is really important for the planet. Sea otters are, I think you already mentioned this, keystone species.
Right.
They eat sea urchins, which would otherwise decimate kelp forests, which is really important because kelp forests store insane amounts of carbon, which is really important for climate change. So sea otters are indirectly climate change heroes.
So 25% of their body weight, what is the typical weight of a sea otter?
I think sea otters, they weigh quite a bit. They're like, because they're part of the weasel family.
Yeah.
And they are the biggest member of the weasel family. Females weigh around 50 pounds and males weigh around 70 pounds.
Wow. So they're taking in, they got to take in somewhere between 15 and maybe even 20 pounds a day. What is their diet consist of? You mentioned sea urchins, other things?
Yeah, they also eat just many small marine animals. Like I know they eat crabs. They eat lots of just small urchins, crabs, clams, mussels, anything like that.
And I'm sure they have plenty of natural predators, but it sounds like the humans are their biggest threat. So what are some of the outlined things that you put together to help us be a little bit more cognizant about how we are around sea otters?
Yeah, so everyone should stay about 60 feet away. And instead of trying to take selfies, you should take photos from afar. And if you want to see them really well, I always highly recommend getting binoculars, because then you're still able to experience them and see their faces really well, but without going up and hurting them. And if you're going to kayak or boat near them, don't go at them directly because that will scare them. Just pass them parallel. Don't circle them. Don't do anything that could come off as predatory. And always spread the word and tell others, because many people hurt sea otters just without knowing. They go up to them and they want to take a selfie and they don't think about the harm that it can cause. And so spreading that word and awareness is really, really important. And always donating to organizations like Sea Otter Savvy and the Wildlife Conservation Network has a sea otter fund. And so doing any of those things can really help sea otters.
Do otters live in families or packs, or what is their social skills like?
Yeah, so sea otters are pretty social. They have groups called rafts, which I think is a very fun name.
Yes.
And then mothers, when they have their pups, they will have their pups stay with them for a really long time, unlike some other animals. Sea otter moms are really, really engaged. They help groom their pups for months and help feed them and do all that for a really long time. But yeah, they do spend time in rafts. A lot of times, actually, if you go to California or Alaska or places with a lot of sea otters, you can see the rafts, which is really fun.
So what has the decline been like for sea otters? Are we seeing large amounts of decline for these animals?
Well, so they were actually almost hunted to extinction in like the 19th century. It wasn't until the Marine Mammal Protection Act that they, in 1972, that they finally started coming back. They were almost completely extinct at that time, which is really sad because people would hunt them for their fur because it's the densest fur of any animal. Mm-hmm. So they have been rising since then, but they are still endangered. So there's still a lot of work to be done.
So you said that you are in Utah. So you're studying, am I correct in saying, zoology at Utah Valley University?
Yeah, I am. I have about two more years to go. But UVU has been really awesome. I also actually study bottlenose dolphins with the professor at UVU.
Wow. Well, eventually, I hope you're going to get to the coast.
I know. I want to.
You mentioned that they have a broad diet. And that's what makes them, I guess, really important to ecosystems, because in their absence, we might have increasing populations of, say, sea urchins, and sea urchins can do a lot of damage to kelp forests. Is that right?
Yeah. They have sea urchin barrens when sea urchins eat too much, where the kelp forests are just completely gone. And kelp forests are an important ecosystem for many, many species. And like I said, they also help store carbon, which helps with climate change. So it has really dire consequences.
So when you're looking towards your future, Marie, what is it that you would like to do with this knowledge and with your degree? What is it that you're most looking forward to?
Well, with specifically sea otters and this project, I really want to spread the word as much as I can. I've been focusing on California, but I would love to focus on more states. 90% of the world's sea otters actually live in Alaska, and there's a big tourism industry there, so I would love to help spread the word there too. And then just in general in my career, after my bachelor's, I hope to pursue a master's degree and eventually become a wildlife biologist and just help conserve and protect animals as much as I can.
Well, you're focused on sea otters, but there are also freshwater otters in some parts of the world. Are there otters here in the Utah or in the Mountain West?
There are river otters in Utah. They're kind of hard to find. They're pretty rare. I know the Loveland Living Planet Aquarium has a project with otters, actually, river otters. But you can find them in Utah.
Oh, you like you say, though, it's not easy. Maybe somewhere along the Provo or Green or some larger water bodies of water.
Yeah, I know they've been spotted around the Provo otter. They have had a lot of decline in their population due to habitat loss and trapping and lots of bad human things, which is sad. But they are around the Provo River.
You also received some seed funding at the end of this externship to continue your work. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I was really fortunate. I think they had 15 people receive funding, so I was super, super excited to receive that. And with that, I created an Instagram and a Facebook. It's how_to_help_the_sea_otter, if anyone wants to follow that. But I was able to promote those social media accounts to help spread the word internationally as much as I can. And then I also did a table at an event called Whale Fest in Monterey, California, because Monterey has many, many sea otters. And that's a huge event that gets many people a year. And so I had a table there where I talked to people and let them know like how they can help, because that's the community that's near the sea otters and who the sea otters are really affecting. So it was really awesome to be able to talk to all the locals there and let them know how they can help and make an impact. And those have been my main projects. I also actually went on the news in Utah to help try to spread the word. So I've just been really trying to spread awareness and get the word out there as much as I can so people can be educated and know to respect sea otters and also all wildlife.
And I just wanted to add, you mentioned Monterey Bay Aquarium. Monterey Bay Aquarium has a otter cam. So you can go on anytime, YouTube or so, and live stream their otter cam. And honestly, I'm not making this up. If I'm stressed out or something, I will turn on the otter cam and I can watch otters just swim around and float about on their backs for a really concerning amount of time.
Well, I think that's great, because I think to Marie's point about protecting them, maybe that's the best way to protect them. If you want to see them,
yeah,
go on there and check out their behaviors, because obviously they are adorable.
Sure.
They are an adorable species of animal, and it is understandable that people are get a little bit enthused about watching them, or it might be, in Chris's case, soothing. For a long day. It's very therapeutic to watch the otters enjoying life. Well, Marie, you're the brightest of our stars coming through Utah, and we appreciate you doing this work and being part of this. Now, Kate, when you hear Marie talk and her excitement and her enthusiasm, how does that feel, and does it help fuel your fire to just keep these programs going and expanding them?
Always, always. It's so incredible. Every day I hear from one of our experts, one of the young people we work with, and it just astounds me. I was not this engaged and on fire when I was in my early 20s and when I was 18 to 25. And it's just really phenomenal to see how knowledgeable this generation is, how action-oriented they are. And I'm just thrilled to be able to stand alongside them together with the Nature Conservancy so that we can really be supportive of their work.
Nice. And I can only imagine, with that many people that have gone through the program at this point, that they really are making a difference, and that they are coming up with creative solutions, because a lot of the times we can point out what these problems are and these issues, but it's hard to find solutions. And I'm loving the fact that these young minds are going out there with these fresh perspectives and probably helping us find better solutions.
That's exactly right. I think a lot of times the conversation is around how we're preparing the next generation of conservationists, how we are providing the tools that they need. And that's absolutely an important piece of it. I have a four-year-old that's the work that we're doing with her at home. But there is so much that is happening right now. There are so many young people, Marie and others, that have solutions today for issues today, that have advocacy tools, that have big ideas. And we know that if we really stand a chance of achieving the goals we want to achieve as it relates to climate change, as it relates to nature loss, we need to be thinking about how we're working together now and today, not just in the future.
And that was Kate Ireland, who is the Nature Conservancy's Director of Youth Engagement, and Marie Taylor, who is an extern there. Lots of great information. Thanks for listening to This Green Earth. If you like the show and you learned something new, make sure you leave a review. And we'd appreciate it if you click 5 stars.